This is the House Judiciary Committee, April 3rd, 1985. Full committee.
Committee will come to order, please. We're going to follow our agenda as closely as possible. We're going to try to knock off today at 5:30. I hope that means we'll be able to deal with the bills. We're going to start with introduction committee bills, move through the list of bills that are here for full committee. 2462 is going to be bumped over because of the need on behalf of the sponsors and the proponents of some rather significant amendments to review further the impact of those amendments. So that's going to be set over about a week. We'll move through the full committee agenda, and the only change in the sequence in which we'll take the bills is that we'll take 2333 after we take HJM 12. And that's at the request of Mr. Kapori, who has been working very closely with us on behalf of the Conference of Child Care Agencies on 2333, and he's got a commitment in Portland and won't be able to get down until about 4 o'clock, so we're going to hold that till the end. And then we'll move into the subcommittee work session, and we'll move as quickly as we can through those bills. There's 7 of them, and it's my understanding there are a couple people who may be down to offer some additional testimony on those bills. To the extent our schedule permits, we will take testimony on them. If anyone's got a severe time constraint or needs some further advice in terms of when we're going to take up the bills, let me or staff know. We'll go first then into the possible introduction of committee bills. Members should have in their stack of materials before them on the desk a memo to the committee from Rocky Barrio bearing this date, April 3rd, for LC 2515 makes certain equitable interest in real property subject to judgment liens and execution. And this bill would be shown to be at the request of the Oregon State Bar debtor creditor section. The second one we have, before I recognize Representative Bunn, comes to us from the Judicial Department. I've got a 2-page letter from Mr. Linden, which I've shared with the Vice Chair, which states that they're requesting that we introduce a proposal on behalf of the Records Management Task Force of the Judicial Department, which would modify the procedures for keeping of certain records and files and related matters, deletes certain required records, including journal fee register and final record, and conforms district court records and record keeping to those of the circuit court. And I can go into more detail. I know Ms. Zuckerman is here to respond if there are any questions. Representative Bunn.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that both of these be introduced at the same time as committee bills, with the caveat that it indicates no necessary support for the bills at this time.
That's understood. Representative Bunn moves introduction of LC 2515 to be shown at the request of the Oregon State Bar debtor creditor section, and the Judicial Department bills LC 844 to be shown at the request of the Judicial Department. Any question?
That does not include a request for a hearing also, does it?
I don't make any request beyond introduction.
Let's go to sub 2.
That's a small housekeeping matter, I'm sure of that. Any further discussion, question, comment? Any objection? If not, motion's adopted. Thank you. Thank you, Patrick.
Question. I was hoping at some point, Council, could you refresh my memory on the doing away with the POS? No. I do have a memory. It needs to be refreshed. The after sentence report, whatever happened to that?
Well, it is sitting in my file at Pesky as one of those research projects to which I haven't given any attention, because we have 18 bills on the agenda for today, but I will have an answer.
Have we done away with it?
I can't say that we have. I can't say that we have. I can say that I genuinely don't know at this point. But I have your little yellow memo on my desk.
Do I understand, Representative, you want a subcommittee one appointed on that subject?
No. What I'd like, Mr. Chair, is a motion from this committee to introduce a bill to repeal after sentencing reports unless this committee has already done it.
Okay. Okay, counsel?
May I advise the representative that we may have done it, but also I'd like to advise him that those two bills in which we may have done it are over in the Senate right now, and they might welcome a friendly amendment there if it hasn't already been done.
Okay. Will we know if we've done it soon?
Friday.
Friday. Okay. See, I need a pass to get over on the Senate side. They're hard to get.
Okay. Anything else by way of bill introduction? If not, let's go on to 2205. Counsel?
Yeah. House Bill 2205 revises the Court of Appeals procedure. We've had one or two work sessions. Jim Nash from the Court of Appeals has testified. There have been two sets of amendments proposed. We have in front of you at least four documents. We have a House, version of House Bill 2205 with the Nass amendments. We have also the amendments entitled 2205-2. These are the Scott Plowse amendments. We have another set of amendments labeled 2205-3. 4-3 Nass Legal Counsel Amendments. You will notice that on line 7 and 8, I have deleted a certain line. This conforms with Hugh Collins of Medford. He's an attorney. These were his amendments, and Jim Nass and I have talked to Mr. Collins, and he's in agreement with these things. The last document is some written testimony by Jim Nass explaining the amendments and what they do.
Okay, and can you refresh our memory in terms of what action was taken by the subcommittee?
The subcommittee directed me to prepare two sets of amendments, the one for Hugh Collins, the Medford attorney, and the other one for Scott Plowse concerning some workers' comp and appeals. And the amendments have not been accepted by the subcommittee.
Okay, have we acted previously on Mr. Nass's amendments?
No.
Okay. Mr. Nass is here. If there are any questions, let's deal first with Mr. Nass's amendment, since he is the proponent of the bill on behalf of the Judicial Department and the Court of Appeals. And that, again, is there's a hand-engrossed version of the bill with those amendments. And those are the amendments that are 2205-3, which have been further amended to reflect Mr. Collins' amendment, which I understand Mr. Nass has no objection to. Is that correct? And Mr. Nass, again, has provided us with written comments and is here to answer any questions.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy?
I would move to amend House Bill 2205 with the amendments labeled 2205-3.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Bellamy moves to amend 2205 with the amendments prepared by Legislative Council designated as 2205-3, bearing today's date. And those amendments also, I understand your motion, Representative Bellamy, to reflect the Hugh Collins amendment, which deletes line 7 and 8. Is that correct? Okay. Is there any question or comment on the motion?
The amendments include line 7, 8 of the LC amendments or not?
No. The motion in the amendment as amended deletes line 7 and 8.
Okay.
Any objection to those amendments? If not, they'll be considered adopted. As far as the Scott Plowse amendments, it would be the chair's desire to I don't believe there's been further opportunity to review these amendments with the Labor Committee or the Labor Committee chair, and I would personally prefer to, since they deal with the area workers' comp, rather than hold up this bill, to go ahead and move the bill without the Plowse amendments, allow an opportunity to confer with the Labor Committee where their expertise in workers' comp is generally recognized, notwithstanding the fact this tends to deal with appellate procedure, and if necessary, take up Mr. Plowse's amendments on the Senate side, unless there's strong feeling otherwise. So unless there's any objection to that procedure, we'll just set aside those amendments 2205-2 to allow us to review it with the Labor Committee folks. And again, if appropriate, we can take it up on the Senate side. Anything else, Council? Okay. Representative Bellamy, to the bill.
Move House Bill 2205 as amended to the floor, do pass.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Bellamy moves House Bill 2205 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Representative Percy.
Do we need to get this A in grocery?
I don't think so. He's an amendment for
were they pretty simple? The I guess I've got a short through which one was what.
Yeah, excuse me. The House amendments, which we're not going to take up.
These are not. Okay.
Yeah, the ones which we've adopted are set up now with the deletion of two lines, basically take up eight lines. I don't think we need to engross it. Any further questions or comments? Okay, if not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Kopetsky?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion's adopted. Any volunteers? If not, I guess it's my turn. I'll carry this one.
Oh, good.
I'm not getting any out of my other committee, so.
Gutsy move, Mr. Chair.
This is a nice thing to get rid of. If I remember this bill on a Friday afternoon, isn't that right? When we heard it,
we won't share that with George Joseph, Lieutenant Bellamy. Again, 2462, we're going to kick over for about a week because the bill and its amendments need some further work. And so the next bill is 2484. Council?
Yeah, this bill has to do with the recovery of AFS assistance from the estate of deceased recipients. In many cases, the need for public assistance arose out of being a victim of crime. This would allow exemption against an AFS recovery. Dennis Sharp, the victim of the Oregon museum shooting, testified in behalf of this bill, as did his caretaker, Marvin Reese. There is no fiscal impact on this bill, and there were no amendments.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2484.
I think you're the chief sponsor, Representative Kopetsky. Do you have a motion on the bill?
Yes. Are we really floor with that?
Would you really have
mine? No. House Bill 2484 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Kopetsky moves House Bill 2484 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kopetsky.
I would say that the impact in terms of the individual that testified on behalf of this bill, Mr. Sharp, his liability, his potential liability, is approximately $900 at this point, even though the state, through various public assistance measures, has put out about $58,000 mainly in medical costs for him. So in no way should this be viewed as a measure to punish is a very strong, it is really too strong of a word, but something along that line, our adult family services. I think there's a need, a policy statement from this legislature and as part of the law that people who become incapacitated as a direct result of crime should not be penalized twice, and also should have every incentive to have as much as possible and enjoy enjoyable and productive life.
Okay. Any further question or comment? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Bunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Kopetsky?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion's adopted. Representative Kopetsky, would you like the honors on this? Okay.
Keep the cares to a minimum.
Okay, next bill is 2453. Counsel?
All right, this bill repeals the criminal defamation statute that we have on the books here in Oregon. It's an unconstitutional statute. Mr. Rex Armstrong appeared before the committee. The only person who appeared on the bill, there were absolutely no opposition to the bill. The bill has not been amended in any way, and there's no fiscal impact.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2453 to the floor with a D-PASS recommendation.
Okay, thank you, Representative. Representative Kopetsky moves House Bill 2453 to the floor with a D-PASS recommendation. Is there further discussion, comment, question? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Bunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Kopetsky?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Aye. Motion's adopted. Any volunteers? Representative Phillips.
Yeah, you sure you want me to do this? I mean, I might.
I don't know. People read it on the floor. There could be some real questions. So.
Well, I hope the explanation is better than the printed bill.
Well, I'm sure counsel will heed that advice very carefully. Okay, 2076.
All right. Bill, you have a staff member analysis and a reconstituted bill beneath it because the bill was amended. This is a law improvement committee bill which was designed to bring the statute in compliance with a case called State versus Harrington. The Court of Appeals ruled in that case that the statute was unconstitutional because it violated the free speech provisions of the Oregon Constitution. This bill has been in both the subcommittee and has gone to the full committee and been referred back to the subcommittee. It was the feeling of the full committee that they wanted to try and retain the language but have it redrafted in such a way that it would be constitutional. The subcommittee amended the bill in this way. If you look at the case, it talks about being unconstitutional because it prohibits free speech. You can, however, prescribe conduct that goes towards the conduct of the person rather than what they say. So what we've done in this bill is we put in 9A, publicly insults another by abusive or obscene words or gesture in a manner intended and likely to provoke a violent response. We struck disorderly because the court felt that was too broad. So the amendment renumbers all the sections and says this publicly insults another by abusive or obscene words or gestures in a manner intended to and likely to provoke a violent response. There wasn't any fiscal impact that I could tell, and those were the only amendments offered to the bill.
Okay, it's my understanding that, my recollection, that Mr. Gruber and Professor Turner, who worked closely with the Law Improvement Committee, were present when we suggested these amendments and concurred with our recommendation that this has a better chance of passing constitutional muster as well as responding to some concerns that were expressed last time in full committee. Representative Bunn.
I understand how it would help meet the concerns expressed, but how does it help meet constitutional muster?
Go ahead, counsel.
All right. I think the argument is this. First of all, we have struck disorderly because the court didn't like that. It said that quite plainly in their opinion. Secondly, we're talking about language that is intended to and likely to provoke a violent response rather than just the language itself. It goes towards the intent of the person to invite a violent response, and there we're talking more about conduct. Words are inviting that kind of conduct, and we think it has a better chance. I'm not going to say that necessarily will pass muster, but Professor Turner thought that it had a better chance than the other one.
Thank you.
I'm not sure I want to stake my professional reputation on this language either, but I think it's maybe the best we can do, and it's a step, I think, in the direction in terms of require an additional intent. Representative Bellamy.
Well, I'm the one that got really violent over this bill. It was first done by the law.
Get disorderly. Sorry.
I stayed orderly. But I really found it rather not good that the Law Improvement Committee just suggested we get rid of language. It's found unconstitutional. What one of our jobs is to look at rewording it so it is constitutional, and I commend the subcommittee and the staff at least making a stab at finding other language that might meet the constitutional test. So I'm pleased with at least the attempt.
Okay. Council, do we need to take action on the amendments today, or it's my understanding we acted conceptually or in subcommittee?
We acted specifically in committee, okay. And you have a reconstituted bill with specific language.
Okay, which were adopted, so we don't need any further action on the amendments today. Representative Bellamy?
I move House Bill 2076 to the floor as amended. Do pass.
Okay. Representative Bellamy moves House Bill 2076 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion, comment, question? If not, clerk will call the roll.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Bunn?
No.
Burton?
Aye.
Kopetsky?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion's adopted. Representative Bellamy, would you like the honors?
I'll try.
Okay. Thank you.
Wear your wig again.
Are you going to challenge me, Sam? You're not. Okay. Burton will, though, I
think. As long as you're orderly.
Are you?
Okay. 2082.
Okay. This is a bill that was introduced by the Law Improvement Committee, which is basically trying to get the statute to comply with a case that came out of the court called State versus Wedge. In that case, the defendant was convicted of robbery in the first degree. The defendant did not use a gun in the robbery, but was held legally responsible as an accomplice for his co-defendant's use of guns. The Supreme Court ruled that a mandatory minimum sentence of 5 years could only be imposed on the defendant where it was proved or found by the jury that he actually used a firearm. And so they turned the struck the case, they struck the court's ruling down, the lower court's ruling down. So what we've done in the bill is we've amended it to respond to testimony that we heard, as well as to provide for what the Supreme Court thought was required in this situation. On line 13 of the bill, the language at the request of Mr. Shepard from the Marion County DA's office that would say specifically that if a defendant was found guilty of committing a crime, but was found guilty of committing the crime and didn't use a firearm, they're still going to be liable for the lesser included crime. So you have basically what will happen is you probably have two verdicts that go to the jury. You'll have one that says the defendant committed the crime with a firearm, second verdict the defendant committed the crime without a firearm. And this language is ensuring that if you find the defendant guilty of not using a firearm, it's still going to be guilty of the underlying crime. All right, that was the First Amendment. The Second Amendment is on line 21, 22, and 23. This is at the request, if I remember correctly, of Frank Gruber and the Law Improvement Committee. They decided that the language there ought to be added down in line 28 after the words, the minimum terms of imprisonment for felonies having as an element the defendant's use or threatened use of a firearm in the commission of the crime shall be as follows. The other amendment that was offered by Keith Sandrock in the Oregon District Attorney's Association is in line 25, and basically he wanted the committee to include language that would say that a defendant would serve a minimum term of punishment before they'd be eligible for not only work release but temporary or terminal leave, and the committee adopted that concept and that language. I don't have anything to indicate that says any fiscal impact, and those were all the amendments the committee considered and then moved the bill to the full committee.
Okay, the amendments were adopted by the subcommittee?
Yes, the amendments were adopted.
Okay. Representative Kopetsky.
Council, you say that there's no fiscal impact.
I haven't anything that indicates there is any. In fact, I have something that says there isn't any.
Did we get an analysis of the jail space impact? Bed space, prison, jails?
I don't have anything like that. I got a fiscal impact statement this morning that said there was no fiscal impact. That's the reason, but I didn't make a specific request along those lines.
Okay. We can try to inquire specifically of the corrections division. Is that your desire, Representative?
Well, I guess I doubt that this is going to have much of an impact, but I guess I'd like to see those future crimes.
Okay, we will see if there isn't some more or additional information available from the corrections division and make that available. And if it turns out that there is some unanticipated and significant impact, we can discuss bringing the bill back to committee, notwithstanding the report to the floor, or make a motion on the floor if that's appropriate.
Do that.
Okay. Representative Burton?
Do you want a motion on the amendments? Mr. Chair, I would move that the
amendments have been taken. Oh, I thought we took care of those in committee.
Yes, we voted.
Oh, okay, so it's a motion. Yeah, so you want a motion on the floor?
Yeah.
Okay, I move that House Bill 2082 has amended passed on the floor to pass recommendations.
Thank you. Representative Burton moves House Bill 2082 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Comment? Question? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Bunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Kopeski?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion is adopted. Any volunteers? Representative Burton? Good.
Great.
Good North Portland bill.
I suggest you not use that line on the floor.
Oh, boy,
there he is. Particularly Kenton.
No.
Yeah, that's
pretty bad. You've been there.
only on police ride-alongs. 2083.
All right, this is a bill. We have a staff measure analysis and also a reconstituted bill together in front of you. This is a bill that was offered by the Law Improvement Committee, again, to try and bring the statutes into compliance with a Supreme Court ruling. In State versus Robertson, the Oregon Supreme Court declared this particular statute unconstitutional because it violated the free speech provisions of Section 8, Article 1 of the Oregon Constitution. The case suggests that a criminal coercion statute would be constitutional if it focused on the conduct compelled rather than on the means to compel it. This is a bill that goes to the definition of coercion. The subcommittee amended the bill to substitute the word unlawfully on line 10. They substitute the word unlawfully on line 10 and 11 tortiously, and they used falsely in line 13 instead of maliciously, and again unlawfully in line 20. The reason the committee changed that language is because they felt that we were using civil law language in a criminal bill. They felt uncomfortable about that, so we tried to pick language that would be more in keeping with the criminal nature of the bill and the crime that's being described. They passed the amendments in full committee. There's no fiscal impact, and they moved it to full committee, and it was a unanimous motion. Unanimous vote.
Okay. And again, I believe Mr. Gruber and Professor Turner had an opportunity to review those amendments and participate in our action subcommittee. Okay, Representative Peterson?
Mr. Chair, I would move we pass House Bill 2083 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Peterson moves House Bill 2083 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Comment? Question? If not, clerk will call the roll.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Bunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Kopeski?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion's adopted. Any volunteers? Well, Rep. St. Peterson will make the DA down in Jackson County very happy. Thank you. 2422.
Oops. 2087.
I'm sorry, I missed one. 2087, you're right.
Hold on, you gotta watch him every minute.
And the committee should have before it a staff measure analysis and a reconstituted bill. Of course, the council submits a reconstituted bill. All right.
Okay.
This is a bill that's passed, if you'll remember, we passed out of committee House Bill 2306 and House Bill, and Senate Bill 90, which had to do with extending the statute of limitations in criminal or in sexual and physical abuse cases where children are involved. This is a companion bill in the same area. The bill was designed to create a hearsay exception when you go to court and try a case where children have been either physically or sexually abused. The function of the measure is to create the exception to the rule which would allow the complaint made.
If you put Representative Hanlon on notice and let him know, we'd be glad to take his testimony when it's convenient, hopefully within a few minutes. Okay, why don't we call on Dorothy Patch?
Chairman, I am Dorothy Patch, and I have listed here some of my qualifications why I wish to support this piece of legislation. I am very happy that the sponsors of this group have seen fit to present this for your consideration. You have listed here in the material that is being handed out to you some items of the social principles of the Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. And I certainly am here not only to speak for the Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon, but as an individual that has been involved in those things that make for peace, both in civic and in church groups. I support this resolution first because in an interdependent and interrelated world, the present nuclear buildup creates international tensions, dangerous competition, and a false sense of security. I think there's no need to take time to recount here what would happen from either a calculated or a non-calculated nuclear explosion. Nor do we need to talk about the senseless overkill buildup that has been going on amongst the great powers in the last few years. However, I do think it's significant that we recall the statement of Dr. Brock Chisholm, a noted Canadian psychiatrist, when he spoke at Willamette University several years ago, when he reminded us that this is the first time in human history that man has had veto power over human evolution. And so because of this kind of a factor, the power that we have with us today, I think resolutions such as this memorial are highly significant. I assume that we are all familiar with the doomsday clock that is the logo of the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. For the last few years, this clock has moved steadily forward. It now rests at 3 minutes till midnight. It has been going forward steadily and never backwards. I'd like to remind you of the statement of George Kennan, the former ambassador to the USSR from the United States, when he decries the militarization of both thought and discourse. I would feel that in this day and age, with the amount of significant knowledge, intelligent response to situations that is available, we can find a nonviolent alternative to war. I'd like to speak in favor of this memorial, first because of the financial cost. We are all aware that the U.S. defense budget is almost $1 trillion in the next 5 years. This amounts to $1 billion a day, the cost to the average taxpayer of $20,000. Do we really feel that we can afford this sort of defense in a world where half the people of the world are continually hungry, where thousands of people, most of them children, die daily because of insufficient food, lack of good water supplies, where ill health because of these nutritional factors really impedes any development process, and again in a world where half the population is under 25 years of age, do we realize what lack of educational opportunity costs? When we look at youth around the world, most of them without any education, and because of this lack of education, they have no jobs. Because they have no jobs, they are frustrated. If we are wise, we will try to understand that thin line between frustration and violence. So when we look at violence in the world, we do indeed need to look at the causes of such violence. It has been said that if we are honest and look at the realities of the world, we will see that these are conditions existing that economically we cannot afford, politically we cannot justify, and morally we should not tolerate. Besides the financial cost of the military buildup, the cost of nuclear escalation, I think we have to look at what economists call the real cost factor. This is the real cost of an item is not just the dollars and cents price tag, but what one has to give up in order to appreciate these. And if you look at the resolution under item number 2, you will find here the real cost principle applied. What the cost of military buildup is costing us in many social and other worthwhile programs. Recently, World Watch, which is a worldwide organization under Lester Brown, issued a report and noting the very dangerous erosion of our natural resources. And much of our natural resources are going into this military buildup. Can we afford to use these scarce or non-renewable resources for destructive rather than constructive purposes? Because the bottom line of any viable economy are these natural resources. One of the economic facts of life is that inflation is the result of military buildup, defense budgets more than anything else. So I would call your attention not just to the financial cost of our defense and military buildup, but certainly to the fact of what this does to economic disequilibrium, not only in our country, but around the world. Finally, we are reminded by world leaders that the real threats to our security today are not geographic areas, But they are indeed those things that have to do with world poverty, which are closely related to the population pressures, which are closely related to our diminishing resources. And all of these are intensified with what we are putting in to a nuclear buildup. So I would hope that this committee would go on record and support this resolution, this memorial on a nuclear freeze. 40 years ago, Archibald MacLeish said that nothing is true or honest in our search for peace but our own purpose, and the choice is ours. The choice is ours today, and I would urge your consideration of this memorial, House Joint Memorial. Thank you very much,
Ms. Patch. Are there any questions? If not, thank you again. Representative Hanlon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Representative Hill, I haven't seen you in a long time.
I understand, Representative, you've got three hearing rooms full of people on the divestiture bill.
We have a crowd downstairs, yes, sir. I'd like to speak. You have my testimony, and my L.A. always gets after me for not sticking to the speeches that she wrote for me. I'd like to speak my strong support for HJM 12 and relate to you a couple of things that happened, or at least recorded in my life, why this may well be very important to all of us, but it's important to me. And I finally woke up and realized the history of it. Number one, my date of birth is August 21st, 1945. A couple weeks before I was born, two events took place, that is, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It was an important month in the history of this world. In 1954, I don't claim a bunch of athletic prowess, but in 1954, as a nine-year-old, I won the city of Chicago high jump at the YMCA, the city title, at a place called Stagg Field. As a nine-year-old, I guess I didn't realize the significance, but some 12 years before, that is in 1942, under the concrete bleachers at Stagg Field, the technology was begun and developed for those bombs that were ultimately dropped at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And ultimately, we are here in 1985 with a buildup that, in my opinion, must stop. That's the reason I'm here as a chief sponsor on this bill. If we have such a huge federal budget, as chair of the Human Resources Committee, it's my strong feeling that those funds that are being misdirected into the proliferation of nuclear arms and the military budget of this country at much too great a strength should be redirected into our domestic human resources issues that we have before us. As you know, we at the state level are feeling the brunt of the cutbacks in federal funding, especially in those areas, and that will be a crux of what we all deal with when we get down the next couple of months to figuring out the budget of the state of Oregon. As a result of that, I'm back supporting HJM in its form this session, in a similar way to the bill that was before us last session, and I will be as long as I'm in this body. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions? If not, just inquire. It's likely there may be a motion, and favorable action by the committee today, Representative. If that's the case, may we designate you as the carrier of the bill on the floor?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We have one more witness signed up to testify, Annie Powell, also with the Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. Yes.
My name is Annie Powell. I'm from Staten. I'm a clergy spouse of the United Methodist Church and a member of the Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. Representative Springer and the rest of you, I support the bill that this memorial that will bring the freeze into being. I'm passing out my testimony, but yet I have some other things that I might add. For about 15 years, 20 years now, I've worked with the youth in our churches. I grew up very active in the Methodist youth program and have continued to be either a counselor or a resource person, a confidant and a friend, and have worked in the camping program extensively. Over the past 20 years, I found that the youth of today in our churches are very, very concerned about the possibility of a nuclear war as well as a nuclear accident. It's my personal feeling that the chances of an accident are as possible as the chances of a war. I don't think that our government wants there to be a war, but I think that in the case of in considering the accident potential, I think it would be possible that a war could be started. It's my experience that the youth are saying things such as, well, I won't have any children. I don't expect to buy a house. I just want to live fast. I want to live for today. And in my statement near the bottom there, I included an idiom that I found growing, and that is that instead of a four-letter word that it might be more familiar now, kids are saying, well, nuke it. It's a figure of speech that shows their sense of impotence, their sense of fear, their sense of anger, and I think that they're calling us as adults to speak to them and give them the answers why we've let the nuclear arms race go as far as it has. I feel that the freeze is especially important as now weapons grow smaller. The Pershing and the cruise missiles make it very difficult to verify their presence just by the size. And I think that a freeze has to come down soon before more of these high technology weapons are deployed. As I come from Staten, I know probably 200 or 300 people who would support the freeze. As I canvassed last summer and fall for the freeze, I felt that that was an issue that people were in favor of. They might not have seen it in the candidate, but they did support the freeze. And I see people in Staten that are directly related to the food industry, and as farmers experience a crunch on their ability to pay back farm loans, FHA loans, I feel like the crisis, the food farm crisis is directly related to military spending, and that our government is not answering human services, human needs. And if the cannery were to go in Staten, so would the rest of the town, the churches and the schools. We're very dependent on the food industry there. And I think that there's a direct correlation between military spending and high interest rates. I feel that there's a sense of hope and that the churches are making steps forward by having statements that support the freeze, and I would hope that it would continue to go on through.
Thank you. We also, of course, have your written statement, which is part of the record. Are there any questions for Ms. Powell? If not, thank you very much. It's my understanding Representative Bauman hoped to be able to appear and to testify. I'm not sure if he's going to be able to join us. I'm sure he would not want our consideration delayed just for the purpose of his testimony. So I would recognize Representative Bauman.
Chairman, I would move House Joint Memorial 12 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Bunn moves House Joint Memorial 12 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there a further discussion? Representative Burton.
Just a comment. Some of you may know that I recently retired at the Colonel Air Force, and I spent probably the first 8 years of my life including a couple of combat tours in Vietnam, and at one point was responsible for nuclear weapons. And being that close to the situation, I think probably and knowing the potential for accidents and for destructive potential of those weapons, I have a tremendous amount of sympathy and am very supportive of any effort to bring about an end to proliferation of those kinds of weapons. I feel a little bit frustrated. I'm going to vote for this. I'm beginning to sense the impotence that the legislature has in passing out memorials, quite frankly. And I would hope, as I say, I'll vote for this, but I hope that everybody will individually take it upon themselves to do something more than just this. It's almost, these memorials are almost becoming conscience savers, I guess, because you sign off on this and say, I've done my bit. These things go off to the desk of a congressman somewhere who either files it or who pays no attention to them. And it's not enough to do just that. And so I think another point I would like to make, and it's because it's an argument that I hear constantly, and I make the argument myself, is that if we stop spending so much money on the military, we'd be able to put that money into something else. That argument doesn't necessarily follow. You dismantle a piece of our economy, which unfortunately has become dependent on military infrastructure spending, you're not going to necessarily replace that with something else. So there's other steps that have to be made in between there that all of us need to address. So I'm going to vote for this memorial, but I also just want to state my frustration that I think is one that's expressed by Representative Bellamy in a different way about these memorials. And I would encourage each one of us to do more than just vote for this right now, and then you go and say, gee, I've done my bit for nuclear freeze.
Okay. Representative Kopetsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I support this memorial, and I concur with what Representative Burton has to say, and I can offer the members of the committee an opportunity right now. I'm involved in a community committee, Salem Peace Park Committee. We're trying to develop a peace park here in Salem, contributions of $10 or more. Gladly accepted. Just make the check out to the Salem Peace Park Committee.
Any further questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly understand Representative Bellamy's and Representative Burton's concern about memorials. And I guess it's something that's very easy to take shots at these memorials, and I guess I look at it in the same way as a constituent writing us. And I'm just not ready to say that these things are meaningless. And it may not have the impact that we would like, but I think we've disparaged memorials to the extent that it's time to start saying that, and maybe they wouldn't say it publicly, but I'd have to think that our congressional delegation, when they receive something from us, I have to think that it means something. Because if it doesn't, then I don't think our system means very much. But thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Phillips.
I'm very pleased to hear your comments, because those who speak out against these better be careful. What you're saying to your city councils and your county commissions is, don't ever pass a resolution and send it to us, because we won't pay attention to it. On the same theory that if we sent pass it to Congress and the President, that they don't pay attention to it. And I don't think that's true. When I get something from Tigard and from Washington County and
Walton or any of the rest of them, certainly it goes in a quote bill file or whatever you do with them, and you take action as you deem appropriate. Even though some of these that we've considered may not be interests of mine, certainly they are of someone, and therefore it's a legitimate reason to discuss it.
See, Multnomah County never writes to me.
Well, perhaps you're lucky. That's why Multnomah County's going out of business.
I've never received a resolution from my county.
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, I certainly can't be the only one who doesn't speak. I would like to... to agree with the last two speakers. I do believe in memorials. When I get petitions from my constituents at home, I not only read the petitions, I read all the names of people who've signed them. So perhaps what we need to do with our legislative memorials is to individually sign them, to commit our names rather than just a body.
Mr. Chin? Representative Bond.
I certainly don't want to be the only one to politicians never give up that chance. Just to add to what Representative Hill said, and I certainly appreciate his comments, I think it's more and more critical that our citizens take a role in their state and federal government in ways that they have never taken roles. We have assumed that we can leave it to the experts at both of those levels, and I'm not willing to leave to the experts what happens with nuclear weapons. And I'm excited about the fact that our citizens are becoming involved, making presentations to us, and that we can make those same kinds of presentations to the federal government and interact in positive ways with them.
Thank you. The chair wishes to thank those who made comments, and I would incorporate by reference and endorse those comments. Any further questions, comments, discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellamy?
No.
Bunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Kopetsky?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion's adopted. The memorial will be to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And Representative Hanlon, the prime sponsor, has indicated his desire and request to be the carrier in the committee report, so designated. Thank you. Okay, we are now at the point where we've concluded our full committee agenda with the exception of 2333, which is a bill we've worked on in subcommittee for some time. There are some substantial amendments. I have... Council is going to distribute the Hammond-Gross version of the bill. Mr. Cafori, who is one of the prime sponsors of amendments, many of which we've adopted, is not going to be able to be here until 4 o'clock, and he has requested that we defer consideration until that time. We can, and what I'm going to suggest is that we take a short recess and come back in subcommittee to deal with the bills that are before the subcommittee this afternoon, starting at the top of the list, and hopefully we'll be able to put in about half an hour, 45 minutes on the subcommittee work, and then reconvene the full committee at 4 p.m. to act upon 2333. And I know this means a little bit of shuffling back and forth. However, I think that'll be the best use of our full committee and subcommittee time, recognizing again the time constraints of Mr. Cafori, who's worked with us throughout this process, and I want to make sure he has an opportunity to respond to questions that may come up during full committee. So the full committee will be in recess until 4 p.m. We're going to come back in subcommittee one at approximately 3:15 and begin work session on subcommittee one bills at that time. Thank you.